It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland as well, getting to know Daniel Pryor with all of you. It's been on about a month now, I think, Daniel, don't you
think? About a month, yeah.
Sound Mind program.
Wonderful month, yeah.
Get to know your mind a little bit, your mind on counseling and life coach issues. Mm-hmm. And, boy, you have a wealth of information. You've helped so many people through the years through all the different subjects and things that we struggle with. This week, something that I think affects, seems like everyone, at some point in their life, and that is healing from a divorce and maybe getting ready for another marriage, but you want to really look into the subject of, well, how do we heal from a divorce before we try and move on?
Yeah. And as always, Mark, we just hit the surfaces here. You can't really get help on a, deep help on a 30-minute show or, you know, because the one-on-one in counseling is kind of where, you know, the work really takes place. And every situation, every person is unique. But I have dealt with a lot of people who have come, and obviously the clientele I see, they're not coming to me because they're healthy. They're coming to me because something's gone wrong.
Right.
So people don't come to me because they want to understand their happiness and joy and success in life. They come because they want to try to understand the other side of it. So the population that I see, a lot of times when I'm dealing with married couples and counseling and married couples and how to get along and how to make it work, I'm talking to people who have quite possibly been divorced before. We do have a 50% divorce rate.
Yeah.
And so, and a couple years back, I was moderating a recovery program at the Baptist Church over there in Kirkland for divorce.
Like a divorce recovery.
Divorce recovery.
We've seen those.
And so, just became a little more familiar, and actually my own testimony too. I, as a young man, an old boy, 19 years old, got married. That lasted 19 months, 1919, and that was just fast and furious and over and done. Then I was single for 6 years before I married my wife of 37 years now. And so I have some personal experience in the whole, divorcing, you know, going through the divorce and wondering, you know, am I ready to move on? And, you know, at that time, there were other single guys that were kind of in my circle who were going through the same thing. And, you know, just, you know, like I said, a 50% divorce rate. And some of these guys were just getting right back out there. Dan, you need to get right back out there and start dating, you know, and
that's how they healed.
And I don't think those probably worked out well because one of the first things that people want to know is, how long before I get back into that? And let's say we're talking to a person who is maybe doesn't have anyone in mind, but they're still recovering from the divorce, and they don't have a person in mind. Their question would be, when am I ready to start, you know, looking again, to start considering relationships again? That's a big subject because healing is different for different people and what we've gone through, and the reasons things went wrong are different. So one person may have taken a lot of family of origin issues into the marriage, those were factors in it breaking up. And so healing means, to some extent, addressing some of those things. I think we all bring family of origin issues in, but some are more drastic than others. And then there are other things that happen in the marriage, financial problems that can occur. The question could be asked, though, marriages fail or does marriage fail? And let me maybe have to explain that a little bit. A lot of our marriages, if not all of our marriages in Western culture, have for quite some time been based on a romantic attraction. Mm. And the romantic attraction has not been very kind, let's say, to the marriage institution, because countries where marriages have been arranged, they haven't necessarily been based primarily on romance, much lower divorce rate.
Really?
Much lower divorce rate. Romance tends to be one of those things that's about me, not about the other person so much. So I think that marriages fail because marriage has failed.
Hmm.
All romances don't work out, just like all friendships don't work out.
Well, they
out.
Seem to have an expiration date on them,
yeah,
too.
That's
just
certainly.
Built in.
Yeah. Yeah. The writers of rules of romance from back in the earlier centuries, I'm thinking of the chaplain, Andre the Chaplain, who wrote The Art of Romantic Love or something like that. And it's actually this code and rules to keep the romance going. You know, you don't want to pursue it too much, you know, and there's certain things you can do and can't do to keep the romance going. But the understanding was that romance is not something you have with your spouse. It's something that you have extramarital because romance is the pursuit of what you can't attain.
Hmm.
We have a similar saying here in the West, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. And so romance is something. So we've in the Western society, we've tried to merge these two things, but without ever really, I think, understanding what marriage, the institution, is about. And so we've tried to shoe-spoon these other relationships into it. And then when the other relations fail, we say, well, the marriage failed. I've talked to a lot of people in struggling in marriage, and the conclusion I've come to a lot of times is that, and told people, the marriage isn't failing. The marriage is doing what it's supposed to be doing. That's what we're having trouble with. But for whatever reason, people find themselves in a divorce and then coming to me and, you know, when can I move on? So we were talking about healing. And, one of the things that I think we assume is that, well, I was married once before. I learned a lot. Now I'm ready to go again.
I'm not going to make the same mistakes this time.
I'm not going to make the same mistakes again.
I'm not going to pick the same type of person.
Right. And they typically do try to pick someone different, but they wind up repeating what I call a relational distance because they don't recognize the first problem to begin with. And I think that starts with recognizing what the institution was, if that makes some sense. If I don't understand what the purpose of the institution was, how successful will I be at understanding what went wrong with the institution or what went wrong with my application of that? We don't always learn from the experience of divorce is what I've learned from my own experience and from counseling with people. A lot of times we approach the second marriage very much the way that we approached the same marriage without recognizing what that is. It's like trying to learn from that first one. I remember I've worn a number of occupational caps in my day, and I've had to take comprehensive exams for this and that. I remember really struggling with a comprehensive exam one time, and then I went to the instructor later and said, "Boy, I really bombed on that." And he said, "You didn't know enough about the material to know where you were weak."
Hmm.
And that's the thing about a divorce and then trying to assume that I've learned from that. The reason the marriage didn't work out in the first place was I didn't know enough about the material to know where I was weak. And so looking retrospectively back on that and then trying to come up with an idea of what went, it takes some time.
Mm-hmm. Time is only a healer if you are using time to heal.
Right.
And there's a process to healing. So what do you mean by this?
Yeah, just by setting and repeating mistakes over a period of time, it doesn't make them better, you know. Two wrongs don't make a right, and this one person has said, bad decisions over time don't get better. So there's a process of healing, and we have to be engaged in a certain method to get healed from. We have to know, first of all, I guess there has to be some vested interest in healing and going back and learning not only what the other person did wrong, but what was my part, because you're never completely right. And you're never completely wrong. And a lot of times when I am counseling a couple that are contemplating marriage again, and or maybe this is the second marriage and they're struggling again. And so I'll go into a genogram. And what I do in the genogram is I'm looking for relational distance and repeating patterns. And
a genogram?
Yeah. It's a history. It's a map of the family of origin.
Okay.
I like to go back to grandparents, parents and grandparents. And so I can talk about that when I do the genogram discussion, maybe in our next week. We'll probably get into that more because it's an important aspect of doing it right the second time through, I think. But oftentimes people will come in and I will ask the gal, you know, well, what happened in his previous marriage, or what happened, I ask him what happened. And what they understand about it is, well, his previous wife was really controlling, and so that's why they divorced. Or, you know, her previous husband, you know, didn't make enough money, or some reason. But the person won't own any part of how did I get myself into that. How did I get myself into that situation? How did I not recognize that? Was there something I could have done?
Well, like before I got married to them, or how, maybe fix the situation while you were married?
Either yeah, before. Yeah. How could I have recognized that before? Mm. Why didn't I recognize that before? Because if I don't understand what I did before that was wrong, or you know, that could have been, then I'm very likely to repeat that. There's like two sides to the story, and it is rarely, I don't think I've ever seen a situation where in a previous marriage that wound up in divorce, one person was entirely at fault and the other person was entirely blameless. If only because the person who was possibly the victim in the divorce should have seen something coming. And so that was a lesson.
I was going to say, because sometimes, people, somebody divorces and they didn't want to get divorced, and somebody divorces them. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my situation exactly, whereas I'm committed to the marriage. I'm committed to the marriage as I understand it, and I probably should clarify that. because obviously in that relationship, I wasn't taking care of everything the way I should have, and so I just totally got blindsided by the kind of the way that the marriage just fell apart, and which is the case with a lot of people, as you've pointed out. You know, one person is blindsided. You know, I talked to a person at one time who was just going through a divorce and had basically been left by her husband destitute with a bunch of bills.
Didn't see it coming,
but it had been coming. He'd been having an affair for 10 years. Mm. And so there are issues there on that person's side as to, you know, recognizing what was going wrong and why didn't I recognize it? Because I need to find out why I didn't recognize that if I'm going to have a chance of recognizing a healthy relationship in the future. Mm. There are some priorities that we want to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, let's put that on pause here just for a moment. People are listening to you, Daniel, and they know that they need to get some help before they maybe make that that second marriage commitment, and they want to avoid the repeat. You do quite a bit of marital counseling. Mm-hmm. How do people get in touch with you?
They can contact me through my phone, 425-778-6169.
BibleBasedCounselor.com.
They can go to the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. Mm-hmm.
And other one, Christian?
ChristianCounselorsForum.com, where I have actual articles that I've written. Mm-hmm. The current article is on the purpose of marriage, which would be a good one for people to read. So that's ChristianCounselorsForum.com.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Talking with Daniel Pryor today on Sound Mind. Daniel Pryor, a counselor and life coach. And again, he has offices in Edmonds and Bellevue. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more on how to heal before you get into that second marriage, avoiding a repeat, today on Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Where marriage is concerned, an ounce of prevention is worth a lot more than a pound of cure. Too many couples start off with misconceptions and then wait until the damage is done to seek counsel. As a marriage counselor, I help couples understand both the purpose and process of marriage, and I teach essential tools of communion. If you're married or thinking about marriage and want to get started right, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
And Mark Holland, interesting discussion today with Daniel on the subject of avoiding a repeat marriage the second time around. And before the break, Daniel, we were talking about how you really need to heal before you try to get into a new marriage situation. And you wanted to talk about some of the priorities in healing.
Yeah, I guess I should put a qualifier on that. Healing is always going on. And so I don't think there's a point at which a person can absolutely know I'm ready. I mean, relationships require some risk. Trust begins as risk a lot of times.
Sure.
But certainly we can take some steps to do a better job, be more prepared. And actually, I think if we're prepared for marriage, we're going to have a better chance of prepared for marriage the second time, we're going to have a better chance of being successful than we were the first time. So the right kind of preparation. So we were talking about healing and saying that time is only a healer if you use time to heal. So setting our priorities, and the thing about setting priorities is that usually when people are either contemplating a relationship or they're in a relationship, patience is hard to come by, and setting priorities requires patience. And then I look back and say, you know, in my first unsuccessful marriage, patience is probably something that would have served me well. If I'd have had more patience, I probably possibly would not have even been in that relationship. And I think that's setting priorities. Here's what I find: a lot of times there are children involved.
Yeah.
So people are going into a second marriage and there are children involved, and one of the things people should realize is that the children are a priority.
So often they don't, though. They move on with that next marriage and that new family, and maybe her kids
and the attitude is the kids will just have to get used to it because it's I need this relationship. But we have to remember that we've made promises to those children. Mm. We brought those children into the world. We committed to them. We already have a commitment on the table. And so the kids need to be okay with this relationship. I don't really have the right to just move forward. I would be serving myself. I would be centered in myself to do that. And self-centeredness is one of the things that's going to go wrong with this next relationship, too. So getting your priorities in financial priorities, prenuptial agreements, are those good or bad? You know, because a lot of people say, well, you know, if it's a prenuptial agreement, we're not really sharing. And there's some truth to that. If we say this is yours and this is mine. The one case that I can think of where a prenuptial agreement is a good thing is, again, if there are children involved.
I was going to say the kids.
Yeah, and again, I've made promises to those children, either spoken promises or understood promises. I am their caretaker, and they come first. And so, if I have finances to take care of those kids, that needs to be secure.
Yeah,
because. Again, I've already got a contract on the table, so I think that
you said education also a priority. What do you mean by that?
A lot of times, I find that, for example, the wife maybe will have in the first marriage had kind of set her employment and her career on the side to take care of the kids. And so when the divorce comes, a lot of times the woman is left behind in education, behind in vocational education. And so to try to get some of those things taken care of so that they're not a stressor on the new relationship too. And that would be something to talk out over with the person that I'm in. If I'm not in a relationship yet, then I need to take care of my career and take care of my education. That would be a priority. If I am in a relationship, then I need to be talking to this person about what's the plan for moving forward. For the gal and for the man and the woman to each have kind of autonomy or a degree of autonomy when it comes to finances and education.
I would think that would be more the case in a second marriage. There'll be two more fully formed individuals by then.
Yeah, and you know, the marriage is the composite of what you're bringing to it, you know, so each person has to bring. So I'm not saying that they have to share in how much they're bringing. That actually can be a sore point in the relationship. You know, I'm making this much, you have to make that much. That, to me, sounds like a relationship that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. But there should be an understanding. We've brought up in previous shows, Mark, that fear and shame, there's only two things we can do about fear and shame. And of course, fear and shame are what drive dysfunctional relationships too. There's only two things we can do about fear and shame. And one of those is the relationship, meaningful relationships. But the other one is industry. that's work that I do, accomplishments that I have. And those have to be in balance, because a person who relies totally on relationship and doesn't bring any self-confidence to the relationship, that relationship becomes very needy. This person is very needy in the relationship, and that's going to drain the relationship.
Yeah.
So those things have to be in balance. So even if the other person is much more employable, I still have a responsibility to kind of carry my end of the board. You know, what can I do? I don't want to enter into a relationship being because of dependency. I mean, I've just been talking to a gal recently who was in a relationship, and just thankfully the relationship dissolved, because it would have been the worst thing for her. But she was in a relationship because she had no other options. Mm. And it's so easy if we don't have some options for ourselves to interpret something. We want it to be love. We want it to be mm-hmm. meaningful. We want it to be real. But we're stacking the decks against ourselves if we're
unprepared. Yeah, I would think that neediness probably is what contributed to the dissolve of the mm-hmm. first marriage, too. So
at least part of it.
Very yeah. often do yeah. want to make sure that's healed.
You and, also, of course, spiritual growth.
Spiritual growth,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. A question for you, spiritual growth might be along these lines, too, as well. Getting too involved physically mm-hmm. before, I mean, that might have been what got the first marriage mm-hmm. to a bad start. I would think with a second marriage, too, that's also a real thing you got to be careful about, because,
probably,
again, it gets romance instead mm-hmm. of the real marriage commitment.
Yeah, and it can be even more of a problem the second time, because a lot of times in the first time people get married, maybe it's not this so much anymore, first time people get married, they're, it's kind of new for them, and they're trying to protect the relationship, and hopefully there's a bit of, you know, there's mutual respect there, and so they're protecting that part. But after a person's been married and sexual intimacy has been kind of a very much a part of that, and then to have that dissolve, that relationship dissolve and divorce, then you've kind of set you have an appetite developed further developed than before. So that has to be, even guarded sometimes even more. And the thing is, there's a saying, people are least loving when making love. And I've talked to couples where the only thing they had in their relationship, they say, well, we don't get along. We don't communicate very well. We got all these problems. We have great sex. And they think that means there's love. But quite often, that's the opposite of love. Mm. Sex can be an anger behavior very, very easily. Well, we're not angry. Now, anger has many faces, and we'll talk about that at some point, either this or in our next episode on this. The anger has many faces, and self-gratification. There's a point in sexual intimacy where self-gratification is kind of the default, and that can so easily be an anger behavior that people can be very distant in the whole marriage relationship, and then just try to be intimate in the bed, and they're not really making love, they're making disrespect and a lot of things that are just going to come back.
Well, I would think for a second time around, two people are fooled into maybe trying to live together for a while mm-hmm. this time instead of mm-hmm. as when they're younger.
Yeah, there's the deception that if we try it out long enough, we can get all the bugs worked out, or mm-hmm. we can see if there are problems. But the thing is that living together is a form of relational distance. And you're actually in a lot of denial. I don't know if you've known people. I've known people who lived together for years and years and years. And then they decided, well, okay, it's going to work. Let's get married. And then they were divorced in a short period of time.
Yeah.
Because there's a psychological and emotional distance that goes along with, I say, permission to leave is permission to stay. It's sort of like the guy who's cleaning toilets and he can't wait to get out of this job, and then he wakes up one morning and he's won the $30 million lottery. So I ask him, so you're going to quit your job? And he says, I'll probably stick around for a while. Why? Because I don't have to. Permission to leave is permission to stay. It's the same in a marriage relationship where people aren't really married, they're living together. They know somewhere in their minds we're committed, but we don't have to be.
Mm. That would be a real temptation, I think, for the second time around. But we want to avoid repeats. We want to avoid problems in a new marriage. So can you tell us in a nutshell how long this is going to take? Is it is it going to take longer for men than women, or about the same? Kind of, it just all depends on how much baggage somebody needs to work through before they go out there again.
Two things. There isn't a way to put a time on it. After I was divorced, I was single 6 years after that, but it wasn't like I was really concentrating on those 6 years on understanding and a lot of those things you can't fix a lot of the things unless you're in a relationship. I mean, there's which should stand to reason. I mean,
I can imagine you're not trying to be perfect. You have to be perfect before you go for
a
second marriage.
Riding a bicycle, yeah. I can try to imagine what that would be like. And I might get a feel for it somehow, but until I'm on it, I'm not going to be able to
I've heard like you need to be single after a divorce for at least 2 years, 2 to 3 years.
I've heard that. Again, you need to get your priorities straight, and those mm-hmm. can take for some people longer than others. During the process of getting those priorities straight, the sense of urgency to be in a relationship may actually dissipate. You know, mm-hmm. people may find that. You know, I really prefer, being single, if I'm having children to raise and they become the priority. So maybe the urgency leaves, but I've heard 2 years, but it can be more than that, Understanding what went wrong, as we said before, not only what on my side of the issue, but the other side's issues. I've heard things like, we got a divorce because she was bipolar. Or he was depressed, and he was too depressed. When we get married, we're agreeing that this person that I am agreeing to marry has problems, and my job on earth is to help them get healed. So when I hear somebody say I divorced the person because they were sick, I just shake my head and think, that's why you were there.
Mm. And that kind of attitude certainly is going to sabotage any new relationship as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Mike, I see we're about out of time here, so I just want to tell people that we're going to be finishing this up in the next week and go a bit further into how to heal, how to know we're healed, and how to move forward in the next relationship.
Marriage the second time around. We want to avoid that repeat of another failure. We want to stay strong and make our marriages as strong as possible. People want some help with their marriage issues or anything else. How do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
425-778-6169 is the number, 425-778-6169. Also, people email me through my website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, and I want to remind people that the current article at ChristianCounselorsForum.com is The Purpose of Marriage.
Great information, great thoughts, sound mind this week with Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.